Welcome once again, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast, live from the brand new, still somewhat under construction, Baseball America Worldwide Headquarters. I'm John Manuel, joined this morning by J.J. Cooper, so we will not have to check our levels. This will be the loudest podcast. I think everybody who listens
to these interviews. And the fastest talking.
Fastest talking, loudest podcast combination at Baseball America, where the podcast crew keeps evolving. J.J., interesting week in baseball this week. Obviously dwarfed by the Baseball America move from downtown Durham to South Durham, South Durham South Durham. But very close to the Polish market and the Insco's Wholesale Meats, for those of you who are very familiar with Durham.
Which is a nice perk. If you want a pierogi, now we have somewhere to go.
We have
had no pierogi options before. But it has been an interesting week, though. I mean, and one of the nice benefits of the new Baseball America offices is that we actually have TV in it now, which I know that sounds crazy considering that, you know, we cover baseball, but where we were downtown, we couldn't have cable or really satellite.
It was ridiculous.
And so because of that, we couldn't, like, hey, Justin Masterson's making his debut. We couldn't watch any of it.
I still haven't watched last year's draft show. I've still never seen Jim Callis on the ESPN draft show.
I have the DVD.
Pitiful that I've never seen it.
But it is something where, you know, now Justin Masterson makes his debut, hook your head in, you know, hey, let's see, you know, what he's looking like. You know, watch a little Johnny Cueto yesterday. That's definitely a nice part of our job that's going to help our, you know, help our job.
It's going to save my TiVo. I won't have to use my TiVo nearly as often because I'll actually be able to watch some of that here at Baseball America. So we're still the podcast room. We're actually going to have a room dedicated to new media, podcasting, hopefully video down the line. But we don't have that room ready yet. So right now we're in the conference room. A little echo. Bear with us during this transition period. But we do appreciate the download. We've got plenty of emails to get to at podcast@baseballamerica.com from consistent emailers and from some new ones too. So we thank everyone for listening and for sending in the questions. JJ, let's get right to the biggest news of the week in baseball, which was Cincinnati Reds making a change in their general manager job. You've done the Reds top 30 for the last couple of years. I've been the Reds top 30 in the past. So we've dealt with a couple of different general managers. We've dealt with a couple of different scouting directors, different farm directors. There's been a lot of change with the Reds over the years, and now Walt Jocketty is in charge, the general manager now. And there's a couple. First, let's contrast him with the last few GMs that have been there. The Reds, in a lot of people's minds, are still kind of like the house that Jim Bowden built, which is kind of scary. But But the two biggest name players on the team are Jim Bowden guys, Griffey and Dunn.
That's still true.
He was the GM when they drafted Adam Dunn. And he was the GM who engineered the King Griffey trade. So his fingerprints are still prominent on that club. Both those guys are getting ready to be free agents. But so maybe then finally Jim Bowden's fingerprints will be off the team. But they're still there. Then you had O'Brien, who had been an assistant GM, I believe, in Texas. I don't believe he'd ever been I think he was a first-time Major League GM.
I think so, too.
And Wayne Krivsky, who succeeded him, was also a first-time Major League GM. And Jim Bowden also had been, the Reds were his first general manager's job. He'd come up as an intern in their PR department. Now they're going in a very different direction. Walt Jocketty
is not a first-time GM.
No, he's a baseball guy. He is a long-time baseball guy.
And that's not to say that's Krivsky and all.
Right, so was Wayne Krivsky. And O'Brien's dad was a GM, so you know, he kept it in the family. But Walt Jocketty has been there and done that. There's nothing that's new to
the
job.
Has the rings to, you know.
Exactly. Has the ring to prove it. Also has the, I believe he was the scouting director in the 1978 Oakland A's draft when they didn't have a scouting department, when Charlie Finley had fired everybody and they basically drafted off a bureau list and brought their high school players straight to the big leagues. And it was Charlie O. Finley. It was a circus. So Walt Jocketty's seen a little bit of everything in the game. What do you think of the move, I guess? You know, the timing of it's certainly curious, but why do you think the move was made in mid to late April?
Well, you got to remember, you know, owner Bob Castellini came from the Cardinals. So he had a previous relationship with Jocketty.
Sure.
And really, I mean, it's pretty clear now that the moment they brought in Walt Jocketty as an advisor, and they said at the time, oh, no, this is nothing about Wayne Krivsky, you know, or anything. It was.
Yeah.
They were. The reality of it was is that, you know, maybe if the Reds had gone out to a 15-0 start, that Krivsky could somehow could essentially postpone the time that Jocketty becomes the general manager. But it's really hard to believe at this point that the plan all along was not at some point that Walt Jocky was going to be the GM. And Wayne Krivsky, essentially, the bad news for him was is that, hey, we have the opportunity to have Walt Jocky as our GM, and we're going to take that, and I'm sorry, but that means you're not going to have the job. Because the reality is that if Jocky had been available at the time of the hiring of Krivsky,
right,
Walt Jocketty would have been the Reds GM.
That's exactly, that's a great point. If as soon as Walt Jocketty became available with his track record and the ties that he has with the ownership, it just makes perfect sense that he's going to be the GM sooner than later. He has the rings to prove it, like you said, that he's a good general manager. The Cardinals are still mostly his ball club, and they're first place in the National League Central right now. So there's that element to it. I think Walt Jocketty's probably got a little stick-it-to-the-Cardinals element there because the Cardinals basically ownership kind of picked Jeff Lunau Walt Jocketty. I mean, it wasn't that cut and dry.
But there was a rift in the organization. Certainly. They said they had to heal the rift. And to heal the rift, they essentially went with the younger guy.
Exactly. They went with the guy who was building the farm system and not the guy who built the major league team, which is amazing.
But at the same time, the thing you can say about Jocky, if you wanted to have a criticism about him in St. Louis, I don't even know if it's a criticism. His approach in St. Louis was never to build through the farm system. But the question I have in Cincinnati is, Cincinnati really has to build through the farm system because St. Louis has more resources. He did trades, but he also would go out there, in St. Louis, and he could sign a free agent to fill a hole.
Right.
There's the question, how much of that can you do in Cincinnati? I mean, Cincinnati has a chance. I mean, it was a great baseball town.
Right. It seems like they should be very similar. Midwestern towns, long history of Major League Baseball,
but the
traditional franchise, but the Cardinals have done more with their tradition.
And also the Cardinals, having lived for a little while up in basically North Tennessee, and you're kind of Tennessee, Kentucky, 5 miles from the Kentucky state line, that's Cardinal country.
Really?
The thing that is as much Cardinal country as Braves country.
KMOX,
if you go way back, basically, the Cardinals were the team. I mean, you got to remember, you go way back. This is way before either of us.
Well, back in the 50s.
The Cardinals was essentially the western edge of, of basically baseball. And so essentially, you have this long time ties for a massive area. The Reds don't have that.
Yeah,
the Reds are an Ohio-Kentucky team.
Which is crazy because WLW was a big deal. And you had the big red machine when baseball really was coming in. The biggest World Series of all time, 1975. The Reds are in that and winning that. I mean, you seem to have reason to have a bigger following for the Reds, but I agree with you. They don't seem to have that national thing. I wonder if that's because WLW is like lunatic fringe radio podcast.
But if you look at it, Cardinals fans also are some of the best fans.
True.
Nothing against Cincinnati fans, but Cincinnati, basically, they have not had a winner in a long time, which never helps your attendance.
And that's the thing. To me, it's more that the Reds have pretty much, with the exception of the 1990 club, they've pretty much been, for the last 30 years since the Big Red Machine, they've still been, A, living in the shadow of the Big Red Machine, and B, the Pete Rose controversy. They're still so tied to the past as a franchise, as a fan base. Maybe Walt Jocketty is the guy who can make them a consistent winner so their fans can live in the present and not live in the past.
But the point I want to make about this move this week, it is puzzling a little bit the time. Their move. The Reds' move is that, the reason given was is that, hey, started off poorly, we had to make a change, we have to start winning. And they were 9-12 at the time.
That's the part that's strange.
Which, 3 games under .500, 21 games into the season, is not, if you believe that was the actual reason, then the Reds ownership hit the panic button in a way that is laughable.
Correct.
That's not the reason.
Correct.
They had to give a reason. The reality of this is that, Wayne Krivsky did not deserve, if you look at the overall totality of what he did, you can't say that Wayne Krivsky deserved to be fired. You can say, Walt Jocketty, we believe, is a better GM, and so that's why we're giving him the job.
But you can't say he did anything that deserved to get him fired.
Giant knock against Wayne Krivsky during his time in Cincinnati was that he is overpaid consistently for middle relievers.
That's very
And he
true.
Has done that. I mean, there's no real argument on that. He's
certainly not alone among the Major League General Managers.
Right. But the bad news for him is that he's overpaid for guys who have not rewarded him for his overpaying.
Yeah, and not just in terms of money. It would almost be better if he just overpaid in terms of money as opposed to overpaying in terms of players. He's done a little bit of both.
He's done a little bit of both. He did, you know, obviously the big trade early on where Austin Kearns, Felipe Lopez for Bill Bray and Gary Majewski, and basically the reality of this is that that trade hasn't, I mean, it's worked out terribly for the Reds because as of right now, the Reds essentially have gotten nothing out of it,
yeah,
except for Darryl Thompson, who's pitching well in Double A.
All the guys they got are in the minor leagues right now. Majewski start off the
year. Unless they're gone.
Majewski, Bray, and Thompson.
The funny thing is Brendan Harris ends up being probably right now has been the most productive major leaguer out of that. But the problem is that he's been productive for the Rays, and now he's up in, you know, Minnesota. It's not something where he's productive for the Reds.
No, you're right. And the thing is, when they made that trade, you know, the Reds were like, well, Austin Kearns, maybe if we get Kearns away from Adam Dunn finally, you know, becomes the player we think he can be. And you know, the Reds still have this dissatisfaction with Adam Dunn. He's a polarizing player. He's having a crappy year so far this year as well, JJ.
Not right now, but the reality is that when the year's over,
yeah,
if you look at...
he's going to have his 950 outs.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, when the year's over, I do think poking, you know, like pointing a finger at Adam Dunn is something that bad franchises do a lot of times. Is like,
I agree.
Point your finger at your really good players.
Yeah.
It's like, no, if you had, you know, I'm not saying if you had nine Adam Dunns, or eight Adam Dunns, because if you had eight Adam Dunns, you'd have no defense at all. And
yeah, but no, I see your point.
But, you know, but... if you look at what Kresge did overall, I mean, that is a knock. You know, he overpaid Mike Stanton, and then they cut, you know, I mean, you know, stuff like that. But if you look at it overall, the Reds right now are in the best shape that they've been in a decade.
And the guys, in my mind, have been the most responsible for that are really Terry Reynolds, first as scouting director, then as farm director. Most of these guys, you know, he didn't draft Joey Votto. Joey Votto's been around for a while, but the guys that he drafted are guys like Homer Bailey and Jay Bruce.
I mean, he had two drafts. He drafted Homer Bailey and he drafted Jay Bruce. And
pretty good.
If you don't, I mean, I know Homer's not in the big leagues right now, but you still right now his value is such that if you wanted to, you could get a lot for him.
And Johnny Almaraz is also not there, and that's the guy who they restarted their Latin American program with, and Johnny Cueto's got all this buzz. I mean, and then Chris Buckley has done a nice job as well drafting the last couple of years.
And you also got to give credit to Kresge. Like, if you look at it right now, the trades they did, yes, the big trade that, you know, he gets ripped for, he also traded Jeff Stevens for Brandon Phillips.
Right.
Jeff Stevens for Brandon Phillips ranks as one of the heists couple of years.
And Jeff Stevens is actually still a decent prospect.
Right.
But Brandon Phillips is a 30-30 middle infielder.
That's you're, if you can find one of those, you know, and pick him up essentially.
Absolutely.
At the time it was for a player to be named.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's a good deal. And if you look at it, you know, he's brought in, I mean, they're pitching right now. Now, they picked up, you know.
Yeah, the Josh Hamilton and Volquez trade could be a win-win. It should be a win-win.
Right now it is a win-win.
And Josh Hamilton for nothing, basically, in the Rule 5 draft. And that's, again, their scouting department. Chris Buckley responsible for a little bit of that pick as well. So, I mean, they've done good things. Like you said, Wayne Kresge's track record is not really what got him fired, in my opinion. What got him fired was Walt Jocketty got fired in St. Louis, basically. Got pushed down in St. Louis.
And, hey, we got a chance. And we're going to take, you know, we're going to take Walt Jocketty. And now the thing we'll have to see is that we talked about the timing. The interesting thing with the timing now is, okay, this move happened essentially at a – everything's set. You've got a – you know, your scouting department is out there, you know, and they're putting together, you know, basically their draft board. Your farm system is, you know, rolling through the season. Well – usually when a new GM comes in, you know, they're going to bring in their guys.
Right.
Well, you know, Jocketty's been there a little while. I mean, I can imagine, you know, when Kresge came in, he brought in his guys. But Terry Reynolds, he kept, and he moved over in our position. The question here is, you know, do you make moves when you've got, I mean, it's really hard to argue with what, you know, basically two of your key lieutenants
have done.
I mean, Chris Buckley's done great drafts. And, you know, Terry Reynolds is, you know, the farm system's been productive.
And the thing is, the guy who ran scouting and player development a lot of the times for Walt Jocketty in St. Louis, John Mozeliak, is now the general manager there. And Bruce Mano's still over in St. Louis. I don't think those guys are headed anywhere. So I don't know that there's guys. I mean, maybe a Martise Robinson is a guy who comes along in Cincinnati. That was a guy who, a former Seton Hall first baseman who was in pro scouting for the Cardinals. Maybe that's a guy who ends up being a Walt Jocketty guy. But I'm not sure which of Walt Jocketty's trusted lieutenants he brings with him. And Chris Buckley's got a pretty long track record as a cross-checker and then sky director with Toronto. Now he's done well in Cincinnati. And Terry Reynolds, like you said, didn't have a great track record with the Dodgers, but his track record with his 2 years of the Red Sky Director, pretty doggone good. And now he's been the good soldier going over to farm director and running that department.
And, hey, in the 2 years, I mean, you got to remember, it's not that long ago that when we talked about the Reds farm system, the overriding theme was, and another pitcher got hurt.
Exactly.
I mean, and another pitcher got hurt. And they went through about a seven-year span where it seemed like if you were a Reds pitching prospect, it was basically like being a drummer in Spinal Tap. I mean, you were basically done.
Chris Grueller was a stumpy Joe Tapp.
Chris Grueller, Robbie.
That analogy.
But, and now.
A little green, really more of a
Homer Bailey, Johnny Cueto, you know, I mean, basically, they've got guys who've made it all the way up to AAA or the big leagues who've stayed healthy all the way.
It's kind of impressive. So it's a time of transition in Cincinnati, obviously. It's the Baseball America podcast. John Manuel and J.J. Cooper. Trying to keep it short today and failing miserably. We've got lots of email questions in the inbox at podcast@baseballamerica.com. One day we'll be like your cheesy local radio station and have the so-and-so inbox sponsored by whatever, but not yet. First, this one, Michael from Seattle writes about the Orioles, and we have a cover story on the Baltimore Orioles in our last issue, so let's get to this podcast question again from Michael in Seattle. He loves the podcast, and in the offseason we rated the Orioles as having the third best minor league pitching. I believe that was actually Jim Callis in a SBA, where the question was, if you just rated pitchers, how would this organization rate? I believe he went Rays, Yankees, Orioles. He thought this was surprising as an Orioles fan. I don't really see a lot of high-ceiling guys in the system, even though Andy McPhail has certainly added depth. He thinks all the prospects have really big questions, and he went through the list. Chris Tillman, track record. Rodimus Liz, terrible ratio. Does he have three quality pitches? Hayden Penn, inconsistent. Garrett Olson, number four guy. Corey Spoon, control issues. David Hernandez, control. Brandon Irby, awful in 07. Jake Arrieta, track record. Tim Bascom, he didn't even have to put down his biggest negative, but he put age versus league, track record, and injury history. You got Troy Patton, who's now hurt, and Pedro Beato. He's like, I guess there's safety in numbers, but I don't see a lot of top-end guys here. Am I just a jaded Orioles fan, or is there something I'm not seeing? I guess, JJ, the way that I would answer Michael is I see a little bit of both in terms of why Jim ranked them so high. I do see some high-ceiling prospects, and I do see some depth. I think Chris Tillman is a high-ceiling prospect. First year I did the West Coast in our draft covers in 06, he was the top high school pitcher in California. He's already in AA as a 19-year-old. He's being pushed. He's being pushed aggressively. I wonder a little bit about that. I might be a little bit more careful with him. But Chris Tillman's got big-time upside. Brandon Irby, still a teenager, memory serves. I think he's still just 19. He's off to a much better start this year. He's got big-time upside. So they have a nice mix. Corey Spoon and Rodimus Liz are legitimate power arms. Jake Arrieta, in my mind, is not a frontline guy, but he's kind of a Andy Benes type, number three or four, durable, middle-of-the-rotation starter. I know Andy Benes was supposed to be better than that, but he wasn't. And then you got guys like Olsen and Penn, Bascom, even to my mind, Patton, who are more back-end three, four, five guys. The real question marks to me are Liz and Beato, the two Latin American pitchers. Those guys could be really high-ceiling guys, or they could just be power arm middle relievers. They're kind of like right. The Juan Cruzes of this organization. If you dream, they're going to turn into Johnny Cueto, what the Reds think Johnny Cueto can be, or they're going to be number two starters type guys. But
they also could be just more reality power arms is coming out of the pen.
Exactly. But I think the key is you got a lot of options.
That was the thing I was going to say. Is the thing that jumps out about this is, and I kind of I don't agree with every assessment he has there, but yes, I mean, I would say there is, if you were ranking the top 10 pitching prospects in baseball right now, I don't know if I'd put,
I think Chris Tillman might check in at 9 or 10, but he's toward the back.
And
he's the only one in my mind.
Right. So that is, I would completely agree with that. We're not talking about, we were just talking about the Reds, but before the season, when you're talking about Cueto, Bailey, two guys who were in AAA.
Yep.
Yeah, we're not talking about that.
That's what the Orioles do not have, for certainly.
There aren't many teams out there. When we're sitting here going Tillman, Liz, Penn, Olsen, Spoon, Hernandez, Irby, Arrieta, Bascom, Patton, Beato. That's 11 guys.
That's a lot.
And the 11th guy, if you were ranking them, the 11th guy has a pretty good chance he's going to be a big leaguer.
Yeah, it's probably Hernandez. He might be the 11th best guy out of all those guys. Or it might be Bascom. And those are all pretty interesting guys.
That's the thing is that with pitching, numbers is strength in a lot of ways because,
absolutely.
I mean, the thing, It's fun, but it's also, I mean, even like when we do this, following prospects and ranking prospects, pitchers, is always difficult because with pitchers, it could be something where something clicks or a guy picks up a pitch and he's a whole different pitcher. So yeah, if you've got good arms.
Or something clicks and he turns into Jack Cordero throwing 79-mile-an-hour fastballs and then he's done. That's the flip side.
You know, but so, you know, if a guy picks up a pitch, but you've got to have that good arm to start with.
Right.
You know, and so.
And they have.
They have 11 guys. You know, you roll the dice of 11, you're going to come up with a couple.
And I'm sure we're missing a guy or two. They have some interesting bullpen guys, James Hoey or Rob McCrory or those kind of guys who could also be interesting guys. Right. But it's the Orioles. And I also, one other interesting part about this, I believe they had the hype machine pitching coach in Leo Mazzoni. Now they have Rich Kranitz as their big league pitching coach. That guy's good. He did a great job in Florida. And he was our big league pitching coach of the year, assistant coach of the year, actually, in the major leagues a couple of years back. And he's already doing a great job. How about Daniel Cabrera's last start? No walks after 8 innings. I can almost guarantee you that never happened under Leo Mazzoni. So there's progress in Baltimore. And that was basically the whole key of our feature story, was that there were actually some seeds of hope in Baltimore with guys like Adam Jones, the talent they added in the trade, the Eric Bedard trade of the Mariners, some of the other trades that Andy McPhail made. And if they ever pulled the trigger on something with the Cubs, I think that'd be even more on a Brian Roberts trade, even more talent to help them for the long term. I do think that finally Baltimore has turned a little bit of a corner. Instead of just trying to get to 85 wins and hope everything breaks right, they actually have a plan, and that's a good thing. One more question for today's podcast. We have lots of other ones, but we're just going to, I think, have time for one more. But send those into us at podcast@baseballamerica.com. Luke Goode, one of our consistent podcast emailers, whose email address even has Baseball America in the name, which probably has copyright infringement, but that's okay.
We'll
really should send him like a Gmail invite, actually, to get him off Yahoo and get him his Gmail. But Luke says there's been a lot of talk about this next song, maybe a little too much talk, about Jabba Chamberlain, whether he should be in the rotation or the bullpen. What do you guys think? Should he conserve his priceless arm and stay in the pen, or should he be used for the maximum amount of innings in the rotation? And Jabba just took his first loss, walk-off Joker against the White Sox. JJ, I've already weighed in on this in the Prospect Handbook. I'm a very big Jabba Chamberlain advocate. All the scouts I talked to saw him starting in the Eastern League last year, thought he was the best minor league starter they'd seen in years. He was sitting 93-96 as a starter, and when he didn't, he was 91-93 early, and then, you know, reached back for 96 when he wanted it. The slider was sharp. The changeup was a solid average pitch. The curveball was at least solid average. So he showed four average to plus pitches as a starter, and the arm works. It's clean, good arm action. Everything I've heard is this guy's going to be a number one starter. He clearly has makeup. Everything tells me number one starter. But he's been so good in the bullpen. What do you think the Yankees should do with him?
I think that Cashman's actually, I mean, from what they're planned to do, is actually a very smart approach, which is, you know what, this guy we think is going to be a number one starter down the road. However, taking him from, I mean, what was it last year, 90 innings?
Something like that.
Taking him from that to putting him in the rotation where you're essentially going to say, okay, well, give us 200. Is too much. And the Yankees very much believe in that you don't want to step a guy up too much year after year. Well, this is where Hank Steinbrenner and Yankees fans, I think sometimes they get so focused on the day-to-day, which is possible. I mean, in New York, I mean, when you've got the back pages every day, it makes sense. But if you move Jabba to the rotation right now and do it essentially, so let's say we're doing it 7 weeks before the plan was to move him eventually. Say the plan is that, you know what, come July 1st, we'll start, you know, stretching them out, we're going to put them in the rotation. How many more games are the Yankees probably, even if you say, take their worst starter, pull them out, you know, and it doesn't really even affect the pen much, which it would, but let's say it doesn't. You know, is that going to be 3-4 games? Maybe. I mean, that's asking a lot if that's going to be actually 3 or 4 more wins.
Oh, yeah.
Probably not going to be that much.
It's going to be as an idea, starting him off in the bullpen and then stretching him out and getting him in the rotation is a great idea. How you do it practically, that's going to be tough in the glare of New York with all that pressure and with the fact that if you lose some games, say you send him to AAA to stretch him out or AA to stretch him out, and you lose some games in the big leagues when guys like Ross Ohlendorf or Edouard Ramirez or whoever in their middle relief blows a game, blows a lead, boy, that's going to come back and look bad on them. It's all going to be like, those are games that Java would have bridged to Mariano Rivera.
But how about, I mean, it may be tough, but why don't you stretch him out? Why don't, you know, he's your setup guy.
Kind of tandem him in the big leagues.
But basically, I mean, the reality of this is like, if you've got Ian Kennedy going right now, you're probably not getting much more than five on the day that Kennedy's going. You go, okay, we're going to go five, and Java's going to go three. And you know what? Three of Java?
And, you know, if anyone would do that with if anyone would give up their innings to Jabba Chamberlain, it might be Ian Kennedy. Those guys have become very tight since being drafted.
But I'm saying, it's not even Ian Kennedy necessarily giving up his innings.
Oh, no, absolutely. No, I know. I follow you for sure. I absolutely follow you. But those guys are like brothers, according to Jabba Chamberlain, and those guys are very tight. So I actually kind of like your idea. Stretch them out in the big leagues as opposed to in the minor leagues. At that point, you're just trying to get those two guys to be their best. Ian Kennedy, go out there and give us your four best because you know, or give us your five best because you know Java's coming in behind you.
Grab your five best, Java will give you three, and the reality of this is that.
And if the next time Java gives you four, all the better. You can use four, the very day before
by the
day
time
after.
He goes four twice, he stretched out till the next time you say, okay, well, you know what? Give us five, maybe six. And then he stretched out, and you could do that where you're actually getting good innings out of him in the big leagues, but you do it in a way that takes. You're looking at the long term, not what the standings are on April 15th. You're looking at the long term and saying, this is going to be an ace for us for the years to come.
And to me, the guys who the biggest key to that, again, in terms of being able to do that plan and keep that plan going, is do Brian Bruni and these other guys in the bullpen serve as that eighth inning guy? Because Jabba's proven he can be that eighth inning guy under pressure. Can anyone else with the Yankees do that? So that's the real question, but I think you're with me. Eventually, he should be a starting pitcher.
Oh, yeah.
2009, this guy, wire to wire, in my mind, should be a starting pitcher, I think. He's got a chance to be, in that regard, Hank Steinbrenner is right. He can be their Josh Beckett. He's the most likely person in their organization. He fits the number one starter profile better than anyone. And that includes Chiming Wong.
And there's no reason that come October, he can't be Josh Beckett this year.
You're right. Absolutely.
I mean, there's nothing that pitching
if
into
he's
the bullpen,
managed correctly. You're right.
There's nothing that pitching. I think he's more likely to be Josh Beckett in October, starting the year in the pen, than he is if he was
starting
out there
the
every
rotation,
5 days
in the rotation in April right now.
Right.
You're right.
Because I think there's a pretty good chance for his first full season in the big leagues that he'd be gassed. Coming.
I completely agree. We'll wrap up the podcast here at BaseballAmerica.com. JJ Cooper and John Manuel. I guess the only other thing I wanted to add to any of that is, JJ, our draft coverage is coming up. Today, though, also Friday, our prospect hot sheet. What's our prospect hot sheet teaser here?
Teaser is it's going to be really hard for Matt LaPorta not. We got the meeting is actually going to be coming up in about 20 minutes. Where he's
five
home runs in the last 6 days, two last night. I mean, basically, he started the year, he did homer the first 45 at-bats. He's kind of made up for that.
The guy's pretty good.
Volstad went seven scoreless and hit a homer last night. He'll probably figure out a way to be on there, too.
Not going to be on the hot sheet, but maybe blast from the past. Willie Glenn, getting promoted to AAA. Willie Glenn, former Indy baller.
We're giving really a lot of little teasers here. Of course, the podcast, I have to work up the podcast and work up hot sheets, so the podcast may not beat the hot sheet up. I'm a little inside the workings of how this works, but Luke Hughes, if you were talking about a guy,
Aussie,
nine home runs, most he'd ever had in a season, he's had five this week, so.
Oi, 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 indeed, for Luke Hughes. So check back at BaseballAmerica.com for the prospect hot sheet chat today. And, of course, every week, the Baseball America podcast. We'll be back Monday with a college podcast. Until then, from JJ Cooper, I'm John Manuel. So long, everybody.